This is Neil Whiteside. Cambridge 105 Radio.
And as I say, my studio guests are in. We've got Ed Grenhart and Tanya Brint. Very good afternoon to you both. Lovely to see you again.
Good afternoon.
And you?
You're our well-being experts.
Gosh.
I know, that's how you're officially billed now. And today we're talking about stress. My God, where do we begin? And that's a good question. Where do we begin? What is stress? What are the causes of stress and how do you spot it?
Oh, goodness. Well, where do we start? It's a fight or flight response that we have when things are overwhelming us. So it's just the body's reaction and the brain's reaction to a threat and overwhelm, whether it's emails, too much going on, the phone ringing, whatever it is that's coming in at us that we feel we can't control, that's what causes stress in us, in our heads and then in our bodies.
And is it a slow build? Or can it just suddenly hit you? Can you be fine, and then one day go, no, and your body just reacts in that way, almost like being an anaphylactic shock?
I would say that sometimes you just don't notice the signs when they're smaller. It's right. Like a lot of things, you know. It's not often that you notice the signs of health problems very quickly. But then when you look back, you think, oh yeah, there was something there. There was, you know, I wasn't particularly, you know, maybe particularly happy. I was a bit more grumpy than usual for quite a long time, or I found it hard, and I was using unhelpful coping mechanisms to try and deal with it. That can quite often be the thing that unfortunately is retrospective rather than something you can spot.
So what are the typical signs that you're starting to flag under the strain of stress? Is it things like lack of sleep, or do you get more? I always used to find my neck used to get really tight and my shoulders used to get. Is it actually a physical thing? Is it a mixture of the both?
Definitely both. I think you can become more irritable. You stop sleeping very well because you're lying awake there thinking of all the things buzzing around your head and maybe a bit tearful. Just that feeling that you can't cope, and that makes you feel very anxious. Maybe your heart's pounding, your breath's shorter. There's all sorts of physical signs that you could see in other people and recognise perhaps in yourself a bit quicker if you're looking out for it.
And again, the aches and pains there, would that be a sort of thing that you'd get people coming in about?
Yeah. I mean, one of the main things that I will tend to ask if I'm beginning to spot that somebody is showing what we call sympathetic dominance, which is that fight or flight reaction picking up and taking hold, is shoulders like concrete, potentially headaches getting worse during the day, poor sleep or very light sleep where you're dreaming a lot and getting very vivid dreams sometimes and that sort of thing. They're physical signs that something's not quite right, that your body and, well, your brain really is actually giving you some warning signs that it's not able to properly wind down and properly go into that restorative phase that it needs to be in actually most of the time.
So you might get people saying, I mean, Margaret Thatcher is always the one who famously said she lasted on 4 hours sleep a night. But what you're saying by the sound of it is that you could be getting 8 hours a night, but it's not the right sort of sleep.
Yeah, quantity and quality are important. So it's not necessarily an issue if you're not getting so much sleep. A healthy amount of sleep is 7 hours. Right. And in teenagers, it's more than that.
About 3 days in the case of my kids.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me started on that thing about kids and how much sleep they need. But genuinely, teenagers do need more sleep. Their brains are rewiring. But sleep quality is so important as well. That's a whole nother subject in some ways, but it's certainly a warning sign if you're waking up feeling like you've not had enough, even though you look at the clock and think, I should have had enough here. Or you're continually waking in the night with things on your mind, which is where some of the things, some of the strategies that we will talk about can help.
Okay, I mean, some of these people, the sort of city banker types back in the 80s would say, I thrive on stress. And a lot of sort of self-motivated, the self-employed, the businessmen, the entrepreneurs, they go, oh, I thrive on stress. Is that true? Do you need a bit of it? Or is it, no, hang on, actually, none of it's good and you're just kidding yourself?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. A bit is great, actually. It drives us to really high performance. People thrive on deadlines. It's you know, they feel very motivated and driven when they are using that stress in a positive way, that adrenaline. But the problem is, if you're in that state all the time, that actually physically is damaging your body, and that's where it leads to illness and perhaps more chronic symptoms of stress and anxiety.
Okay, all right. Well, I presume there's two ways of looking at this now. There's preventative and curing. Is preventing the stress in the first place. So let's look at that. And then if you've got it, How do you try and ease out of it? Where's the best place to start? Preventing it in the first place?
Yes, I think that's a great place to
so
start.
So how would we do that?
I'm just going to agree with you. How would we do that? Well, I think we've already talked about sleep, which is a whole other topic, as Ed said, but that's being well rested. There are so many things you can do to... when you feel that overwhelm, when you feel that you're not coping, and it's to sort of take back control, just by simple things like doing something you really enjoy. Mm-hmm. Maybe something physical, going outside, walking. So you've got the benefits of that, but actually properly seeing the sky and the birds and the trees and all that. It might sound a bit daft, but that is actually very restorative.
That was why I took my National Trust membership out, was exactly that.
Yeah,
well done.
You know it works.
Yes, it does.
Being mindful of what you're doing, so actually focusing on the task instead of thinking of all the other things you've got to do. So if you're sitting down to have a proper meal, you're actually enjoying that. You're not checking your emails at the same time and that sort of thing. Getting lost in doing something you love, like dancing or reading a book, or, you know, these are all things that just sort of fill up that bucket again and make us feel a little bit calmer.
Right. So it's a little bit, this is down to chemistry and to the body's chemical balance at times, and a lot of it is down to this, isn't it? And it's getting the right end, serotonin and stuff like that flowing, is it?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Because stress hormones, adrenaline, cortisol, they wreak havoc in the body. Basically, if they're up there at high levels, you know, for a long time. And I think a lot of us forget that and don't realise that inside of us is kind of a chemistry set which is going on, and that chemistry set affects not only our physical well-being but our mental well-being as well. And, you know, going back to the idea of you know, sleep and relaxation, we're not machines. We don't go on to standby very easily. Mm. We need to wind down to get to a point where we can sleep well, where we can relax, where we can focus on something other than maybe the thing that has been stressing us out all day at work or at home.
That's interesting, because a lot of the time people tend to, when they have breaks, when they have holidays, they tend to cram. And it even seems that they get stressed, even when they're on holiday. Because, yeah, like, I need to relax now. Yeah. And the children aren't helping, and the weather's not quite what it should be, and there's mosquitoes. And even that, so what you're saying, Tanya, is you've really got to kind of focus on this and just take the steam out of the situation. Is that right?
Yeah, and actually that's a really good point. I think when you're going on holiday and everybody's coming up for holiday times now and the kids are finishing school, that can be really, really stressful. Yes. There's so much to do. So I'm planning... I find that really helpful. So just writing everything down, getting all that mental clutter out of your head onto a piece of paper, scheduling it out. Sounds mad, but out what you need to take with you or what the kids are going to do and all those sort of things can really help. Even if that goes off a little bit, you know, you have to be a little bit flexible. It really takes some of the constant sort of pressure of having to think and keeping it all in your head. That definitely helps.
Okay.
Writing it down.
So a bit more planning about this, and a bit more generally sort of taking your time and taking more of a run at things, building in things like I was saying, like going for a walk. I used to do that in my lunch hour. Always a great way, just to go out for a walk at lunchtime. Just, you've got a sandwich shop opposite, but there's a sandwich shop in town. Walk to the sandwich shop in town, that sort of thing. But what about if you're going, well, that's fine, that'll help me prevent me getting stressed, but I'm really stressed now. So I guess facing up to it at the time that you are stressed, this is what I'm busy, I'm tearing around, and you want me to do what?
Yes.
Go for a walk? How do I do that?
Yeah, you know, how have I got time to do that?
It is. Yeah. I can hear people screaming at you now, going, it's all right for you in your radio studio. What about me?
Yeah.
So how do you take stock of a situation that's clearly perhaps getting out of control and go, whoa? How do you do that? Is it just a case of go through your diary and cancel everything?
Well, that's one way you could start to feel in control. Mm. Might not be very productive. might not be, you know, you might not be able to do that, to be fair. One of the things I think that often gets overlooked is really simple. It's just talking to somebody. So sharing how you're feeling a little bit with someone who's going to listen in a non-judgmental way. Sharing it, maybe put their arms around you or whatever, you know, that raises some really good chemicals in your body, which actually helps you calm down. So it's oxytocin, isn't it, that really helps you calm down. So things like that, and sharing, which not all of us are very good at, because we think we should be coping,
we're very private creatures. To a man and a woman, we are, aren't we? Men, we all know, don't, as a sweeping generalisation, men, we know, don't talk about anything. I'm fine. But we're honestly not. We know that. We know that now. Yeah. You hear Prince William and Prince Harry talking about it. You're not fine.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But I think it's great, actually, what they're doing and the focus on mental health and how it's okay to talk about it and to have those conversations. And I think it's such a simple thing, but it's so important that I think particularly for men, as you said, that there is that stigma, that sort of, well, I should man up and not expose how I'm feeling.
A lot of people in the old days used to worry about it in terms of, well, if I'm seen to be failing, then I'm going to be out of a job. But actually, a lot of employers are now taking this on board, aren't they? Going, you know what, we can't just, as you say, we're not machines, we are human beings. We can't be doing this all the time, and people need care.
Yes.
I used to work for a company where they would tell you off if you checked your emails while you were on holiday. They used to tell you off.
That's good. It's good on holiday. Yes.
And we had a CEO who used to come back after 2 weeks holiday and say, right, I've just deleted the contents of my inbox. If it was that urgent, send it again. And do you know what? And people just said, what? Well, he said, well, if it was that urgent 10 days ago, I'm assuming somebody did something about it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that is true, isn't it? Companies have got a responsibility to just go, look, let's all be realistic about this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, big part of it nowadays is digital overwhelm. If you like, it's a new phrase I've just brought out of my back of my head.
It's definitely one.
But it is a big thing, because when you're on holiday, there is sometimes that expectancy. There is nothing wrong with putting an auto reply on that says, "I'm sorry, I'm actually away on leave," or "I'm just away."
I'm not sorry, I'm away.
I'm away. I'm having a break. And if it's truly urgent, you'll have to, do the old-fashioned thing and pick up the phone and call me. But you may then have to leave a voicemail, and I'll get back to you if I think it's urgent as well. Because then that way you actually create that buffer. And a huge amount of people these days are actually not realising, but the screen in front of them, whether that's a tablet, a phone, or an old-fashioned monitor, that is producing quite a lot of a chemical change in your brain,
right?
Because you've got that blue light that comes off the screen, and that is just basically telling your brain it's the middle of the day. So if you're doing that at 11 o'clock at night, your brain is waking up. So checking your emails or getting on your phone just before you go to bed and then expecting your brain to switch down, it's just not going to happen.
So it's not the actual physical... it's not the content of the email necessarily that's doing it, the fact that you're wandering around Facebook and seeing... it's the fact you're looking at a screen, and it is actually that screen that is doing the damage.
It's both.
It's
well,
both.
Yes, true.
Yeah, it's both. But yeah, you see it if you walk past someone's house and it's late in the evening, they haven't drawn their curtains, you see that blue light emanating off their TV screen. That is the same kind of light that we will get during the day. It hits the back of our retina and it tells our brain, okay, you need to be alert and awake, it's the middle of the day. Whereas if you've got a more of a red light, and nowadays actually most of the phone companies, they do have changes that you can make to the screen.
Yes, they do. To dull it down,
to get that red light on. That is a great thing to start with, just to help with that. And that's not to say you can then take your phone on holiday and check all your emails just with it on the red light setting.
Yes, so I'm doing it to rest me.
Yeah, exactly. But that is a good thing to do every single day in the evening. Set it up. I've got an old-fashioned... Android phone, and so I've had to put an app on called Twilight. It's a free app, and that puts a red background onto the screen rather, and that's much more useful. But then I would much rather actually not use my phone for the last half an hour before I go to bed, because I know that is going to make me struggle to sleep. It just that quality of being able to get down to a relaxed mode. And if you just keep stimulating your brain all the time, then you're really going to struggle, and it's going to affect you mentally as well as physically.
And obviously one of the things I guess you've got to watch out is the quick and easy way to relax, which is usually a bottle. And that's a real trick, isn't it? If you start presumably keeping your eye on your consumption, no one's saying you can't have a drink, but you've got to keep your eye on it, haven't you?
If it's being used as a coping mechanism, oh, I'm stressed, I need a glass of wine or whatever, then that's a warning sign, I guess, that you're not coping particularly well. And having a chat with somebody might be more productive longer term, because that actually will take you down a slippery slope.
Well, the trouble is often people feel they can't talk to people near to them, but there's plenty of help places about. Yeah. You don't need to be ringing a help line, do you? It's not like you need to ring. You can. There are some around, but there are plenty of places now where you can get counselling and general advice, aren't they? So you'd recommend those.
Yeah, talk therapy, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so we got you getting that out of your system and getting your problems there. They always say a problem shared is a problem halved, don't they? What about exercises and things? Are there sort of pressure points that the body goes to when you're getting stressed? We mentioned, you said, you know, shoulders going like concrete. Are there sort of hot spots around the body which, yeah, that's because you're stressed?
Yeah. Well, it does quite often start around the shoulders and neck, and we'll see people having what we call postural wind-up. So shoulders are rolling forward, head's coming forward, and the tension then from that needs to be released somehow. One thing that we recommend to a lot of people is using a foam roller, which you might see in the gym,
mm-hmm.
But not the shorter foam roller. You need a long one, about a metre, 90 centimetres to a metre, and just lying on that with it lengthways down your spine.
Lengthways?
Yeah. So you just lie on that, knees bent, arms out, just totally relax, put on some music, give yourself 5 or 10 minutes. You'd be amazed at the difference that it makes just to relax your shoulders, unwind that posture, go from there, really.
That is amazing. There is one of those stood in the corner of one of my rooms at home. Never, always wondered what it was there for. So it's lengthways that you're supposed to. It just shows you that someone threw the instructions away.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. What about people who also tend to? They do a lot. Stress often goes with a lot of travelling, doesn't it? So in cars and in trains. Are there any little tips and tricks you can do if you're sat in a seat for hours and hours and hours?
Put on some music that's relaxing, and don't get angry with the idiots that are driving around you. That's probably the most important thing. Road rage is a bigger and bigger thing because there's more and more cars around. You will get cut up at some point during your commute. You just have to kind of do what I do, which is give them a good round of applause and then just carry on. I think that's my coping mechanism. I think it's usually the best way to do things. When you're in the car, you do need to be looking at your posture. From lots of perspectives, that's really, really important. But it is about making sure that your brain is working quite hard when you're driving, even if you've been driving for 30, 40 years. It is working quite hard. You know, you do have to concentrate on a lot of factors. So, again... giving yourself that break. If you've ended up being sent out on a conference that's the other end of the country, don't try and do it all in one go on the morning that you're supposed to be there.
Yeah.
You know, go the evening before if you can, or give yourself time, factor it in so that you can get out, have a bit of a wander. You might need to use some caffeine to stimulate your brain to keep it going, to make sure that you're feeling good. But you do need to, again, make sure that you're giving yourself that little bit of time so that you don't end up completely wired. You're not going to cope very well at the end of that journey
isn't it? Always. Well, there we are. So if you're stressed, there's some hints and tips. Ladies and gentlemen, if they want to get a hold of you and have a bit of a chat about this, Ed, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way to get a hold of me is to look for our Facebook page, which is Cambridgeshire Family Chiropractic, or to go to cambridgeshirefamilychiro.co.uk.
And Tanya?
My website is appetiteforsuccess.co.uk, and anybody can contact me through that.
Lovely.
Facebook.
Excellent. It's lovely to see you. I feel de-stressed already, but then I am off on holiday next week. Ed Gronhart, Tanya Brint, thanks very much indeed for coming in.
Thank you.